Before we begin, I want to tell you about two awesome events that are coming up very, very soon. On January 31 and Feb 1, we are hosting the Sweathead Get Ahead. It's a free live stream from London that's going to feature over 12 of the UK's best strategy minds. On Wednesday, January 31, we'll have at least six people sharing their APG and FE award-winning case studies from 2023 with us. And then on Thursday, February 1, we'll have several people sharing their 2024 trend predictions. It's free and you can find out details at sweathead.com. I'm going to be in London for this, and I'm going to also be doing a live masterclass in person on the morning of Thursday, February 1 from about 9 o'clock till 1:30 p.m. Again, details at sweathead.com. Hope to see you at all of these things this year. It's going to be a big year. What's up and welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. Today I have Alex Smith, founder of Basic Arts, a man who works very much with founders and brands on strategy and who this year has exploded all over LinkedIn. There was a day where there was no Alex Smith, and then there was a day after which there was always Alex Smith in the feed. Today we're going to talk a little bit about social media and being a strategist online, because I know a lot of people listening to this are like, maybe I should speak a little bit more. We'll talk about running your own business. Alex has been running Basic Arts for 8 years, and so obviously, especially over the past 3 to 4 years, so since 2019, 2020, there's been lots of ups and downs. How do you psychologically prepare for that? How do you organize your days? And we'll get into a couple of Alex's most successful and recent social posts, including how I get my competitors to write my strategies for me, and 5 words more useful than the word strategy. So we've got a lot to cover today. Alex, how did you explode out of nowhere?
You pretty much hit the nail on the head when you said that there is one day there was no Alex Smith, the next day there was Alex Smith. And that's even how it feels for myself. I feel like, was I even a person before I was posting on LinkedIn? Like, who was I? But it really was a very straightforward situation where I've had a newsletter for a long time, but with pretty glacial growth. And then it occurred to me, well, why would it grow? Because how would people ever hear about it other than random, you know, someone forwarding something to someone? And so in sort of proper classical marketing style, I suddenly realized, oh, I don't have a top of funnel. There isn't really any place other than through human networks, as opposed to social networks, that where someone would hear about me. So I've got to be doing some sort of top of funnel activity. For various reasons, I thought that LinkedIn was the most sensible way of doing that. So I started posting in maybe February. Obviously doing lots of learning, lots of analysis, trying to figure out what people want to hear from me. And then, yeah, to be perfectly honest, it was basically one post probably got 25,000 followers by itself. It's really like winning the lottery. And after that, I wouldn't say it's all easy, because then you get a new set of headaches and challenges, as I'm sure you've experienced yourself, but you are over the hump. And over the hump is clearly the difficult bit, which most people will never achieve. So in that respect, I feel very grateful to the algorithm gods for one day just deciding this post, this guy, because honestly, that's really what it was. And I think if I'd done everything the same, but without that one post, I don't know where I'd be.
It's true. Do you remember what the post was about? And you better.
Oh yeah. It's branded into my mind. It was how I actually write a strategy document. And it was about the actual literal structure of the thing, the piece of paper upon which the strategy is written. And I just wrote it because, you know, you get quite a lot of clients, you know, if you're doing a strategy project, they'll say to you, okay, fine. You've done your spiel about strategy, but what do I actually get? I love saying that. What do I actually get? And so this was me trying to respond to that question. And so I just laid it out. The parts of it are boom, 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 boom. And I guess people just found it to be an intensely practical thing.
And when you're talking about strategy, you're not talking about advertising strategy. You're sort of in an adjacent space. Do you want to explain the kind of work you do and who you do it for? For whom you do it?
The way that I would describe it, which I think that a lot of people would quibble with, but I do think it is in line with the way that founders and chief execs think about it. So they're essentially who I'm trying to align with. Is that I would call it company strategy, by which I mean setting the direction for the business as a whole in the market. So what is the thing that this business is going to give to people, which they want, but which they can't get anywhere else? My thinking is very simplistic. It's like, if you crack that code, then you'll make money very easily. If you don't crack that code, if one of those two parts of the equation are lacking, then you will have a fight on your hands. And obviously most businesses do struggle in one of those two pieces of the pie. And obviously then once you've defined what that is for the given business, then the business needs to execute on it across the entire spectrum of everything they do. So they need to tailor the product to delivering that thing. They need to obviously tailor the brand and the messaging to communicating that thing. They need to tailor their routes to market to what is the most effective way that we can get this thing to people. So all of the bits and pieces of the business underneath, I mean, everything is subservient to the basic question of what is the value that this business exists to put out in the world and exchange for money. So answering that question, which is at the sort of top of the pyramid, so to speak, that is what I do. Now, it's obviously very, very close to, you know, brand, but typically, I'm sure there are exceptions, but typically, you know, brand is the kind of the second layer of the pyramid where you're talking about how do we frame and present what this business does in the most compelling way possible, as opposed to the slightly more fundamental question of what does it actually do? I think about it as a cascade. What does the business do? How does it deliver it? How does it present it? Boom, boom, boom. And so once you answer the thing at the top of the pyramid, everything else then in principle falls into place and each layer briefs the layer below it. And so the strategy game, as I see it, can be played at many different layers in this cascade and all going all the way down, you know, 5, 6, 7 clicks below that until you're getting into a social media strategy or you know, like a retailer strategy or whatever it might be. We're just talking about the first point in that cascade.
All right. We'll get into more of the strategy thing in a second. I've just got a few questions around your social media experience so far, and I want to sort of test some things that I've seen happen, some behaviors I've seen happen, and see if you've either seen them or experienced them. The first one is I have a hunch there's a correlation between the number of times someone talks to you about how many followers you have, their resentment of you, and within 6 to 12 months, a drunk shitpost online. Does this feel familiar?
It definitely does feel familiar, but I would say that overall, it hasn't been too bad because I'm very, very explicit, defensively really, about what I'm trying to do, which is because my audience is not other strategists or other people who spend all day thinking about strategy, I'm not interested in kind of like debating the finer points of the discipline. And you get people coming in trying to do that, but it's just off topic for me. And actually, you know, I don't even think that I'm necessarily very good at it. I don't think I'm the most knowledgeable strategist in the world. What I do is I basically do sort of quick, dirty, shorthand articulations of strategy for non-strategists, founders, chief executives, people who are having to do strategy. You know, strategy is only maybe 5-10% of their headspace, and they've got a whole bunch of other crap that they need to think about. I'm just trying to say to them, look, it's actually pretty straightforward. Just do this, this, and this, and you'll already be, you know, 90% of the way there. So by taking that sort of position, I like to think that I inoculate myself from the heated peer-on-peer dogfight. And every so often I have allowed myself to slip into that. And when you start to get into, oh, well, you know, is this brand strategy or is this such and such strategy or whatever, it becomes ugly very quickly. And I feel horrible about it all day. And so then I think, note to self, don't enter into those conversations. And not that I think those conversations are not worth having. They are worth having, but they are dangerous conversations. And they're also conversations that from the point of view of running my business, I really, really do not need to have. So why expose myself?
Okay, I like that. Let's talk in a year or two because I found that the frequency at which someone mentions your, like, why are we talking about how many followers I have or someone has? Who cares? But like the number of times that someone talks about that or even messages you about your social posts, correlation to jealousy and eventually blow up a little bit later on. There's another behavior that I've seen that I find interesting, and maybe you haven't gone through this yet, but it's what I would call a narcissism bender. And that's when someone has an explosive moment on social media and they either keep talking about that explosive moment or they talk about their followers and their growth, like basically every second social post. Have you had moments where that little beast inside of you has said, whoa, look at all of this gold I have?
Oh, mate, this is a huge topic. I mean, in short, I actively restrain myself from sort of redeeming that gold mine, because all of the people, not all of them, but like 90% of the people who are big online in general, creators in the business world, are big because they're telling other people how to get big. And it's the easiest game in the world to play if you have managed to break through. Justin Welch would be a classic model where he started off, you know, he's a big LinkedIn guy. I'm sure people are familiar with him. He started off talking about B2B SaaS or something. That was his actual sort of topic. Then he got very big on LinkedIn doing that and then quickly realized, oh, okay, well, actually, it's much easier to build a business telling people about that than it is telling people about B2B SaaS. So I'm very conscious of that. And I'm very conscious that I could get better traction than I'm getting now if I lent into it more. And I have done the odd little thing about it, but I limit to maybe one out of 20 posts, if that. Because ultimately, you know, it's not my business. I've got a big audience by the standards of a solo consultant, but I don't have the big audience by the standards of a creator in the abstract. Aside from anything else, I actually think it would be a bit disingenuous of me to say that I'm an expert in building an audience online, because, you know, I've got like a total audience of about 50,000. If it was 500,000, I think we might be having a different conversation, because then you get into a situation where you really have a bigger upside financially. But for me at the moment, most of my income still comes from strategy consulting projects. So I'm not going to do something which pollutes that water. But like I say, when I'm at about 500,000 followers, then that's another one where we can talk again. And then you can call me out and say, oh, look, it's all just audience building techniques and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure. That's a little bit different. I mean, that's a classic thing to tweet about tweeting, blog about blogging, YouTube about YouTubing, podcast about podcasting. I've been online since the 1990s and I've seen these people pop up all the time. And I'm like, should I do that? I don't know. For me, this is more of a creative practice that I build a business around, right? So it's different energy. But what I heard in that is no narcissism bender just yet. You didn't answer my question, but no like big emperor-like narcissism bender, just day-to-day grinding away, trying to get the business to click through social media, right? That's what I heard.
Yeah. And look, and don't get me wrong. I want the narcissism bender and I'm sure that I would do it. I just don't think I've earned it. And going back to your sort of asshole point as well, another thing, to be honest, that I've realized is that like attracts like. And if I don't want people being mean to me, then I do also need to manage the energy that I put out there. And normally when I get a comment that makes me feel bad all day, I'm not going to say normally that it's a little bit, I wouldn't say it's justified, but I can look back at what I've written and I can be like, you know what? I kind of asked for this. Not in a proportionate way, but there's always like a flicker there. And I could see an alternative reality where if I went full narcissism bender, I don't think I would be having such a nice time because I would be getting blowback for the narcissism bender. So I'm not sure the juice is worth the squeeze.
Don't worry. There's a few personalities over in the UK or who are connected to the UK that are 100% narcissism benders who are doing quite well in business while posting on LinkedIn. No names mentioned. I sort of know what you mean when you think you might have deserved it. I think unless people know you and hear your voice, if they just read a post and it's clearly written and telling someone what to do, it can seem a bit sharp to some people. And so I can understand why people might react against it. But also, you must have had occasions where you've written something that's obviously written with where you can see the intention of the words, let alone the words themselves. And you're like, you know, my favorite color is red. And someone comes into your comments going, what about blue, yellow, and pink? Have you experienced that kind of stuff?
Yeah. The whataboutery, where it's completely off topic from the subject, where I see that most often, yeah, not just most often, but also most sort of illogically, is if I ever happen to mention in any way in passing something about Tesla or something like that, just to illustrate a point, you'll always get people slamming you because of the association with Elon Musk. So if you say something like, this feature on Tesla cars is strategically interesting because of X, let's say, 100% you get people below you saying, unfollow, how dare you like so-and-so Elon Musk. You don't have to mention Elon Musk directly. So, and it's annoying because the thing about Elon Musk, love him or hate him, And I'm completely get that lots of people hate him and I'm totally fine with that. But he's an incredibly open chief executive, which means that he makes for excellent case study material because he's very transparent about the games that he's playing within his businesses, whereas most businesses are very closed. So they become quite difficult to talk about as case studies. But he's going out there constantly putting out stuff which illustrates strategic principles. So it's very, very useful, uniquely useful person for sort of strategy discussion. But then, yeah, I often like feel like I have to, oh, he said something very interesting here or whatever it might be. Can't really talk about that because people are going to slam me. So yes, that is the one where you really get the whataboutery.
Have you had difficult nights or weekends after negative comments online?
I wouldn't go so far as to say difficult nights, difficult days, definitely. The duration of the misery is probably 5 or 6 hours. But I would also say that that is 5 or 6 hours from, to be honest with you, very, very mild stuff. I've never had anything, honestly, that I would class as bad. And so I don't know how I would feel if there was something that was truly hostile or aggressive. The worst comment I ever had, and this just shows you how easy I've had it, was something along the lines of, I made some comment in passing about an ad, actually, which is why I'm very careful to avoid the advertising world altogether, because I'm too afraid of getting piled on. And it was just a sort of casual observation. And then someone said something like, the fact that you haven't thought this through at all gives us a pretty good idea of the way that you do strategy as well. It was something like that. So it's like, it wasn't nice, but quite honestly, it wasn't terrible compared to what other people get. That knocked me off course for a whole day. I was miserable about that. So I'm not super robust.
I wonder if I could guess who it was, because there are repeat offenders. I have receipts. I have DMs from people who are utterly mean on the internet and who've tried to blow up my stuff and my community. And then people tell them to stop or to stop being mean. And then they DM me saying everyone's being mean to them. And I'm like, what is going on? And often within a few weeks, they write about being nice online. Or nice to other people. I'm like, you have zero self-awareness. You're literally trying to like hurt people all the time. And you're going to talk about being nice and you're going to talk about empathy. It's crazy.
There is an idiom. I'm struggling for it. But you know, it's something along the lines of sectarianism, whereby the narcissism of small differences. I think that's what I'm going for. And if you are in an industry or playing a game online like you are, that is very peer-to-peer, I mean, that's difficult, I think, because the peer-to-peer atmosphere is very horrible. When you're playing what I'm doing, which is not peer-to-peer, but sort of consultant-to-client relationship, where my audience for my material is not my peers, it's actually a much safer space to be. You are a bit inoculated from that narcissism of small differences issue. So although I do have lots and lots of peers interacting with my stuff, because I'm never speaking to them directly, it does actually make it a very sort of relatively peaceful place to be. That's actually quite helpful. But I could totally see in your situation how things could spiral out of control pretty quickly.
The peer-to-peer thing was the best thing about it. I've been writing about this stuff online for, it must be 15 plus years, having done music, writing and radio shows and stuff before that. And the peer-to-peer thing was the best thing about it, because we're all sort of a little odd, maybe a bit too intellectual, often in our heads. We'd write blog posts, maybe appear on Twitter a little bit later. And it was really, really cool. And in my mind, I was always writing for someone a few years behind me. And basically, to my younger self, here's what you could do. That's basically how I largely think of things. It's only really become toxic-ish in the past 4 years, to the point where there are definitely a few characters who seem to turn up drunk. Middle-aged white men typically turn up drunk in people's posts and just try to destroy them. And then again, they'll talk about being nice. And there are also pods of people who try to cancel strategists online. It's really toxic, to the point where it's like, take a photo of you unfollowing this person or doing something to this person and report back to our Slack group. Super toxic. And really, really, really not cool.
Do you put this last 4 years thing, is this purely a function of a downturn in the industry? Why now?
Smart person. Hey, pull your mind out of those timesheets for a second and take a look at the Sweathead website. We have 3 membership levels, Starter Mode, Flight Mode, and Beast Mode. They give you access to a variety of strategy masterclasses, conferences, accelerators, and online learning, some of which has been known to make people cry because they like it, they like it, they feel seen. Make the most of your mind this year or any year and visit www.sweathead.com today. Now back to the interview. To be simplistic, a combination of just like, oh my God, what is going on in the world? I'm really stressed and I'm in my apartment or home or whatever it is all the time. Dealing with people who are largely in their heads all the time anyway. Then I think as people are getting older, there's the difficulty of staying in the industry, broadly speaking. And a lot of people are like, this could be my last job. I might not get back in. Some of them being told that they won't get back in. Sometimes because they're older or because of skin color and things like that. And then I think there's more of a competition. Finally, there's a couple of academics who've been quite mean to people, even though they're quite loved as well, some of them. And so their acolytes tend to start copying them and even calling them into posts to dunk on other people. That's quietened down this year. And then the final one is just the ups and downs. You know, so where we are right now, it feels like there's more rounds of layoffs. Maybe there have been three or four big rounds this year, at least two. And every time that happens, freelancers have more time on their hands and people just get angry and resentful and it comes out and it's so weird. So I don't know, they're my five reasons.
It's a really good analysis and points in there I'd never thought of, but yeah, I like it.
I wanted to talk about this a little bit because, you know, being online for me has changed my life. I mean, it helped me move to New York. I've got a book out of it. I've met so many people, worked with lovely people because of it. And some of the negative things that we're talking about, they're just hazards of doing stuff on the internet. And the platforms have changed over time too. LinkedIn wasn't angry really until the past few years. For me, Instagram is not like this at all. I don't really get any anger. For example, a few years ago, just on Instagram story, I mentioned the word shaman and I had someone come in going, what are you doing, you heteronormative middle-aged white man, blah, 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 you should know better. And I was like, oh, I thought that was also a Northern European thing and the person was from Eastern Europe. So I get random things like that on Instagram, but it's super rare. LinkedIn has become angry. Twitter was definitely angry for a very long time. Instagram, I don't really find it so angry. Final question on this, and I wanted to share these things because it's changed my life and I want other people to experience some of the good things of this, getting the voice out there. Having a writing practice is really how I would describe a lot of what we all do. Has this been good for business?
It's churlish to complain about any of it. Going back to what I said before, you know, like winning the lottery. I mean, it really is, you know, the winning the consultants lottery, if you like. So yeah, I mean, just on a very basic level, the volume of leads increases exponentially. And the other big thing, which I haven't quite sort of fully exploited yet, but it's all in the works, is that you then get into a situation where you can have a productified business, which for an individual like you or me, that is really, really exciting stuff. You know, all the passive income, da 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 da. I mean, to what extent the reality will match the dream, I need to see. But the very fact that you have the option, the very fact that you can actually just put out something that costs $10, $100, whatever it might be, and sell it, and people will buy it, that's an amazing feeling. It's a feeling which sort of proper entrepreneurs are obviously very familiar with, but it's a feeling that knowledge workers, so to speak, are not very familiar with. And yeah, when you get even the tiniest little taste of it, this sounds really stupid. It was like a veil falling from my eyes where even though I've been sort of advising businesses for all these years and working in business for all these years, it was really only when I started flogging just random stuff online to people that I was like, oh, this is business kind of thing. It was a very sort of paradigm shifting moment. And suddenly, you know, all of the kind of Alex Hormozy universe, so to speak, starts to make sense. And then you do start to get a bit sucked into the world of just like, how do I sell shit? Da 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 da, which is super exciting. But yeah, you know, always to be balanced with other stuff. But yeah, that was the most kind of unexpected effect of it.
Totally relate. I used to sell a magazine in my 20s and I loved it and then sort of got addicted to timesheets. Past 7 years been deliberately trying to build a business where we don't sell time, where there are products, where there's some consulting, teaching, etc. It's a different lifestyle. I realize this, especially when the year gets a little bit quiet, largely due to seasonality. I realized two things. One is how the timesheet lifestyle is so wired into me. Like if I don't think I've got a million things to do, and even in my calendar, you know, I box my days out, even though I run my own company, like it's so wired into me. It creates a little bit of PTSD sometimes, I think. But then two, just the beauty of having a product that you can work over many, many years, having a set of IP that you can flywheel into different shapes. There's something beautifully creative about it for me. And I know everyone approaches these things with different energies. Some are just blatantly capitalistic. For me, I've been trying to be business-minded while also exploring my own sense of self-expression and creativity. So for me, that's the Venn diagram that I sit on rather than like being hyper-capitalistic. You know, at the end of the year, I'm like, oh my God, you know, I've sold like 7,500 copies of this book. It's like 15 years in the making, but like really 6 months of writing and preparing, which is not that long for an 80,000 word book. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe that this has happened. It's beautiful. It's definitely a little bit because you're able to pay for your family. But the fact that people have trusted you with their money and their time to buy something from you, I think is the thing that gets me the most. But again, we're all wired a little bit differently. So you've released a book, right?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. Yeah. No bullshit strategy. I completely feel what you're saying. And I think that that point about the act of self-expression being, you know, pure sort of knowledge worker timesheet lifestyle before, the process of your work, I think, is a reflection of yourself. So there's joy to be had in that. But the process of actually creating something external to yourself, which is very you, so to speak, that is a whole nother feeling. And so that's been a real play. I mean, you know, even like just, you know, doing your own branding, stuff like that, even that is very fun. And yes, a book as well. And then it is a different dimension to the business game. And yeah, I think that on the point of the hyper-capitalistic stuff, one struggle that I have is that getting that balance between being sort of authentic and true and being here are the sort of salesy, clickbaity, trying to pull the lever is quite difficult, because actually it isn't the hardcore cynical capitalistic stuff. It actually doesn't perform as well as the stuff that has that dose of authenticity in it. Although equally, if you're too authentic in the other end of the spectrum, that also doesn't perform. So it's a real tightrope that you're walking to try and get a bit of that kind of like grimy salesiness in there, but also your sort of highbrow sort of truth, so to speak. That I'm constantly falling off one side or the other of that tightrope.
I feel like where I come back is like, as long as you're contributing stuff. I mean, you know, I've had anonymous posts about me and my mate Julian Cole saying, you know, we're scandalous because we charge money to teach strategy. We should be doing it all for free. And I'm like, and people send that to me. I don't go into those environments. First of all, why are you sending that to me? You now depress me. And two, I have thousands and thousands of hours of free content on the internet, and I've been doing it for 15 years, mostly for free. And it's just weird. And it's like, why would you expect to get a martial arts thing and do it for free, yoga for free? Probably not. So therefore, what, I don't have the value of a yoga teacher having done this stuff for like 25 years. I don't, there's some really weird things out there, and that negativity does attract negativity. Let's think about someone who's got a good career behind them, and not that you have to have a good career behind you before you write or publish or build products around your brain. But let's say we're thinking about someone who's got a good career behind them. What have you noticed either in yourself and in other people about the obstacles, the barriers in their minds that prevent them going on a journey like the one you've been on?
You know, I did a lot of sort of the courses to help you with this, you know, Justin Welch stuff, Unignorable Challenge, just because, you know, I mean, when I started like in February, you know, I didn't even know like how to use LinkedIn kind of thing, like setting up your profile, all that basic sort of stuff. So that was all really great. But what they don't tell you in that stuff, and, you know, I got absolutely zero criticism, all that stuff was like really essential for me, really helpful, is that they're not going to tell you the factors which determine whether or not you have any chance at playing this game. And there are factors, I think, which just rule you out. And I think the main one is whether or not you have the ability to essentially just generate material fast. And it doesn't have to be writing. Writing's what I do. Writing's what you do. But there are other sort of like mediums of expression. But the absolute core pillar of all of this is the fact that essentially, just because it's something that, you know, is just, I enjoy, I could sit down and write you a 1500 word article about anything in 20, 25 minutes. I could just do that, right? It's just a particular random skill that I happen to have. If I didn't have that ability to just churn fodder out, then I just don't think the game would be playable. But I think that people, they aren't told this. Instead, what happens is people will see someone who they admire, a model that they want to copy, someone who's very big, and they will then say, okay, I need to do the stuff that that guy or that girl does, because that is kind of like the secret to winning in this game. But actually, the secret to winning in this game is finding something which for you is a piece of piss and you can do very high volumes of very easily without driving yourself crazy. And whenever you see someone, whatever their model is, the model is not the secret. The secret is always the same. The secret is that they found something which they can churn incredible volumes out without any sweat. Now, if you can't churn out incredible volumes of whatever that model is, then you will not do it. And I've seen people on these courses, I've seen people trying to play the game. Let's just say, for sake of argument, with written posts. And I'm like, you don't like writing. You're not into writing. I can tell this, but you're trying to like build your entire career and business engine on writing. So that's never going to fly. I think the most fundamental thing is just finding some form of expression that you find easy. And I would also say that, look, a lot of people don't find any form of sort of external creative expression easy, which is also fine, because there are thousands of jobs and billions upon billions of dollars that aren't resting on the generation of content.
I'd want to highlight about four subpoints of what you said, including the main one that you've made. One is the love of writing, if you're going to choose writing as a way to express yourself in the world. Two is what you're implying there. You need some kind of domain knowledge, otherwise you're not going to be able to churn out stuff. And that domain knowledge needs to come with some kind of credibility. I've definitely seen people in this space pop up with courses on brand strategy, advertising strategy, people researching it, and they've never even worked in the industry, or maybe it's for a year or two. And it's like, that's good, do it. But also, what's that? And there's an obsessiveness, I think, that you're implying, and probably the ability to turn all of those things into some kind of routine where you're turning up to write quite often. So for me, there's a few little sub points in what you're getting at there. Any other obstacles that get in the way?
And then the other one is, do you know that Jack Butcher visualized value image that everyone loves and everyone's seen, that basically the moral of it is that consistency is really important, and it's just flat, 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 boom kind of thing. And the implication of it is that if you just keep on showing up and you keep on putting in the hours, eventually it will work. Although, of course, this is the sort of shape of how things panned out for me, and it is sort of true on one level. I think on another level, there's something quite harmful and untrue about it, which is that I think a lot of people read that as they overestimate the importance of consistency, but they underestimate the importance of constant learning and improvement. I've got pals out there who have been putting out content on a pretty regular basis for much longer than me, 5-6 years, and they're nowhere. Where's their reward for their consistency? But the thing is that, like, the reason that they're nowhere is because the way that they've played the game, the way they put stuff out there, it hasn't changed. There isn't any evidence of analysis and learning and negotiation with the audience. You know, there's the thing that you want to write, and there's the thing that the audience wants to read or listen to or whatever. And your job is to find where those two things intersect. But implicit in that is the fact that the thing that you want to write, nobody wants to read. You have to start at that place. That's your starting point. And I think that people don't put in the effort to take the journey to learn about basically the ways that they suck and the ways that they're unclear, or the things that are interesting to them but not interesting to other people, and make that negotiation. They think that it's only about self-expression, but ultimately it is about a negotiation with the audience, because it's not just your time, it's their time as well. And you need to really work out what that is. So from day one in February, when I was on LinkedIn, so I'm not saying this is the only way to do it, I'm just illustrating the point. From day one, I paid the full whack for Shield, which is like this LinkedIn analytics software. And I was looking at all of my posts and the engagement numbers and this, that, and the other. And I was really trying to say, what's right about this post? What's bad about this post? And it's exciting. You get better. And actually, weirdly, rather than it corrupting your voice, I think it does the opposite. I actually think it refines your voice. It's a process of removing all the vanity and fluff that you think is important to you, that you think is central to you, but actually isn't really. And it then leaves you with the pure source of who you are. So I just think that there's not enough emphasis placed on this learning process.
Let's talk about voice, because again, I think for a lot of people who've spent a decade or two in business, they're exposed to this soft business writing, press release writing, and also a lot of trade publications in whatever industry you're in. The articles are written quickly because they're usually given away for free and there's a PR vibe to them. So every now and then people will send me, for example, a book that they're working on or an article that they're working on, and they, like, you know, give us some feedback. And if you ever do that, if you're ever looking for feedback, don't just send someone your stuff, even if you've asked them if you can, and say, give me some feedback. Ask some specific questions, because it's a little bit thirsty, a little bit greedy just to be like, hey, what do you think? Because usually someone who's asking you, what do you think, doesn't really want to know. It's like with an entrepreneur, they set up a company and they're like, what do you think? They don't want to know, because you're doing it because you're already in your head, you want to do it. But one thing that I think is relatively true is a lot of people who try to take a foot into business writing, they struggle finding a voice and they kind of write like a PR machine. How have you worked your way to your voice? I mean, you just described some of the ways using analytics, seeing what worked, et cetera. But how have you found more of a voice this year in the past few months?
I'm very lucky in one respect, which is that all the stuff I write about, strategy and all of that, I never, ever learned it. So I've never had a boss or a mentor or anyone who taught me the game. I started it when I was in an agency like 8-9 years ago, but they had no strategy department or any pretense at strategic capabilities. And I asked if I could form the strategy department, basically. So I was just, you know, making it up and sort of observing what looked like strategy from the outside and then post-rationalizing it. I did my learning through observation and post-rationalization. So then you come to these understandings, which at the time I thought, oh, this is a very original insight I've come up with here. Years later, you realize that you've come up with something which is actually just a fundamental principle of the discipline, and there's nothing new under the sun, but you have a whole new language about it. So my advantage, in a sense, is that I automatically have a new language around old concepts. I don't believe that there's really anything or barely anything that I'm putting across, which I don't think that hasn't been put across before. But because I post-rationalize these ideas, they just use a different vocab. If you're coming from a very highly educated and credentialed place, it's very difficult, to your point, to break free of the standard boilerplate way of talking about something. So obviously this isn't very practical advice for people because people can't go back and sort of unlearn what they've learned. But I do think, but the general point of really saying what you mean and not leaning on concepts is a very powerful technique. So words like proposition, vision, mission, that type of thing, I never, ever, ever use any of those words, partially because I have no idea what they mean, but also because my philosophy is don't ever let a word do the communication for you. Just say what you mean. If when you say vision, you mean the thing that we want to happen, for sake of argument or whatever, then just say the thing that we want to happen. So I think that once you sort of break down all of the industry vocab and just really focus on what am I actually trying to say here, that really makes people sit up. That really kind of like makes what might be a kind of basic, obvious point suddenly sound like this super profound, impressive insight. And actually, it's funny. It's something I get on a lot of my posts, is that I'll make a point without leaning on any sort of in business vocab. And then you get someone in the comments who'll say, oh, basically what you mean is da da da. And they'll say it in a business way. And I'll be like, yeah, actually, I am making a totally boring and redundant point. But no one thinks it's boring and redundant just because I'm saying it using different language. So it's incredible. You say something which is the ultimate truism and you get like 1,000 likes for it and 500 shares. But if I just said it using slightly different words, people would be like, why are you telling us something that's so bloody obvious and we all already know?
Now, it is funny when you started to go ballistic, there were a few days where a couple of other people I know who were using similar techniques would appear and there'd be a stream of posts in the feed. And I was like, oh my God, they're all written by artificial intelligence. You don't do this a lot, but there's definitely a style where it's like one hook, one first sentence, which is like, you know, there are 5 bad ways to write strategy. I'll show you the best ways. Follow how. I mean, you're quite deliberate with how you write things and you don't use artificial intelligence. Is this correct?
No, I don't. In fact, I have even sort of very, very weakly and half-heartedly tried. I mean, I would never get it to write a post, but at least tried to get it to sort of assist me. But it just doesn't chime with what I'm doing. And you could make a quality argument. One of the reasons I don't do it is because I think it's a lot more work. Because all the stuff that I write is just, I just sort of sit down and think, what is the post? What is the point I want to make? And then I just splurge it out. That's the easiest way of creating a post. Why am I going to make my life more complicated by nursing an AI to do something which, being real, I could do in 5 minutes? So it's not even like a sort of a moral crusade or anything. I'm just doing the lowest friction path.
Alex, you know, we were going to talk about a bunch of other topics, but I'm happy that we spoke about this because I only speak about this a little bit. And like I said, I know that a lot of people who want to have a bigger public presence, sometimes they see the negative voices that I'm talking about and they're like, oh, that person's going to do that to me, so I won't. And if that's you out there, look, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. If you can connect to a sense of, for me at least, self-expression, writing, community, connecting to people, rather than, you know, an outcome goal that you're going to become a billionaire overnight, that to me is like the most sane way to go through this. It becomes a little bit of a lifestyle. Don't get turned off by the negativity. It's always there. Alex, obviously you're very active on LinkedIn, so it's probably the best place to find you. Is there another place that you're very active online? Newsletter?
Yeah, LinkedIn, where you go search Alex M.H. Smith for obvious reasons of name recognition. My newsletter is the sort of more longer form stuff, which you can find at my website, which is basicarts.org. Yeah, but I mean, you know, maybe the best thing is the book. That's the body of knowledge. It's called No Bullshit Strategy. And I think that to build on your point, if you ignore all of the obvious, you know, you obviously you want to grow, obviously you want to get attention, engagement, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you need to find a way of doing it where you get value from it outside of that, and refining your thoughts and developing your own body of knowledge, developing your own, you had a good phrase for it earlier on, your own set of IP, you know, that's a really worthwhile process for everyone. And I think maybe everyone in this vague industry should be doing that. If you do it in public online, you're doing it, but plus you also get the added benefit of feedback. So it's a double win, with or without the audience, in a way.
Well, may you keep it up. May you find joy. Matt Klein, who works at Reddit, he's got this concept called audience capture, where an audience captures the creator and the creator can't change topics when they get to a certain stage. So you see that a lot on YouTube. So that's going to happen if it's not already happened, and if you're not kind of gleefully, willfully involved with your own hostage taking. But yeah, best wishes. Thank you so much for sharing the past few months with us. It's been super interesting.
Thanks a lot for inviting me on.
Peace. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sweathead. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend, subscribe to our newsletter, find us on Instagram or LinkedIn at Sweathead. And if you're interested in finding out about our strategy, memberships, company training, or books, visit sweathead.com.